SBS Radio.
I am Bertrand Tungandame on NITV Radio, and I'm in conversation with the Flinders University's Professor Corey Bradshaw. And we're catching up in the sidelines of the release of our groundbreaking study mapping the superhighways travelled by the first Australians. Welcome to NITV Radio, Professor Bradshaw.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
This is a groundbreaking story that not only has international implications, but for First Nations people, the superhighways that the ancestors travelled on this land.
I've been studying aspects of the earliest times of peopling of this great continent when it was known as Sahul. Well, we've given that name since. It probably wasn't known back then as Sahul, but it was the large continent that is Australia, as well as New Guinea, but also much, much larger because the sea levels were so much lower then. So it was about 30% bigger than it is today, just the Australian part. It was a massive continent, and the more I've started looking into the patterns that are derived from archaeological and climate records, we are starting to appreciate the immense capacity for not just survival, but being able to thrive in these very harsh environments so long ago.
Yeah, and your study reveals that the continent could have even sustained up to 6.5 million people at the time, and they were able to navigate this supercontinent.
Yes, I mean, remarkably resilient and innovative people, certainly. The population estimates are derived from various sort of insinuations about what we call carrying capacity. So that's taking climate models and moving them backwards through time. I mean, we take climate models today to project what the future might look like, and it doesn't look good. But we can do the same techniques and go into the past. And with that huge additional area, including New Guinea, we've come up with that possible range. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that there were that many people, but it was certainly possible that there were that many people. If you take just the Australia of today, that equates to about 3 million people, which is still rather impressive.
Yeah, rather impressive for a huge land. And not only the area that they covered, but also the harshness of the condition. It's the driest continent on Earth.
Yeah, again, this sort of talks to the resilience and adaptability and innovation of these ancestors of the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples, that they could negotiate and it wasn't just moving through these areas and surviving the other side. We've actually, the models that we're putting together suggest that they settled in much of these very dry areas in many ways like they do today, and what they were doing when the Europeans first invaded. But what's fascinating is that it's, you know, some of the insights from past archaeological work has suggested that it really was only the coastal routes that were used from initial occupation, but that doesn't seem to be true at all. We see great swathes of the interior, not only being traveled, but also, as I said, being settled and people thriving there in fairly large communities. Only the driest parts of the driest desert seem to have been largely avoided, although they were traversed. So we're starting to get a much better picture for the adaptability of the various peoples throughout Sahul over those, you know, tens of millennia.
And your study looked at dozens, hundreds of scenarios covering billions of possible ways of navigating this land.
Yeah, so the two articles that are together on this one, the first one actually looks at different scenarios of entry time, as well as the entry points throughout the north, and then the second one looks really at billions of possible pathways that are conditioned on the ability of people to move at a certain rate, so just, you know, walking with some water, for example, the ability to find water, because water is always sort of one of the most limiting factors, as well as beyond the sea on the horizon, elevated points that you can orientate yourself with. So putting all those things together and then validating them with the position of the oldest archaeological sites around Australia, we've come up with these high probability superhighways that are probably the ones that were the easiest and to navigate and to survive when moving between major regions of Australia.
Now, in this study, you've used cutting-edge technology for your findings, but how do you correlate your techniques, your findings with indigenous knowledge, spirituality, the dreaming time, which has shown to have a very strong connection between people and country and a very good knowledge of country and the land?
Yeah, so that's the exciting next step. We haven't got to that step yet. This is really where we're hoping to work with a lot of different Aboriginal groups and around Australia, is that we can start to look at the relationships between dreaming stories between different mobs in different regions, as well as looking at linguistic similarities and differences, and even looking at cave art and shelter, rock shelter art, to see the similarities between regions and see if they kind of match what our models are inferring about traditional movement pathways and the durability of those. I mean, we're talking about, you know, 60,000 plus years of superhighways being laid down and then potentially persisting up till the modern times, which is just, you know, mind-blowing. And we're hoping to do more of this sort of also later in the period, what we call the Holocene. So this is, you know, from about 8,000 years to the present. And we do already start to see sort of traditional Aboriginal trade routes, as well as stock routes that, of course, were based on Aboriginal trade routes to begin with, that are starting to, they appear to be overlapping to some extent with these superhighways that the models have produced. So it's a very fascinating an exciting step forward about really taking a lot of indigenous knowledge and indigenous spirituality into a scientific context, and the both of the type, those two different types of data really talking to each other in a formal way. And it's something we've been trying to achieve for a long time, and I think this is one of the big steps forward from being able to do that.
Yeah, and this is a study of really international significance because of the area you cover, and will not restrict the context just to the Australian context. It goes way beyond Australia, goes even to the African continent and beyond, and also the fact that it's a huge team you've led to make all these discoveries.
So this is part of the Centre of Excellence for Australian Biodiversity and Heritage, which is a large multi-institutional group that includes scientists and academics and Indigenous people from all across Australia. And so this work included anthropology and included archaeology and genetics and geomorphology and climatology. It was quite a transdisciplinary piece of work that we're really hoping also opens up a lot of investigations elsewhere, as you said, sort of looking at the out-of-Africa pathways and through Arabia, also potentially people entering into North America much, much later, of course, from the Bering Strait and then coming down the coasts of North America and South America, and really trying to probe these somewhat mysterious potential movements. We know people came at the certain times, but we don't know exactly how they moved. And this is a technique, I think, and an approach that we can apply across the planet.
Yeah, I'd like to conclude on that. But there could be something that I missed in my questions that maybe you'd like to bring to the attention of our listeners.
I just want to say one thing that, you know, I started the interview by saying the more I look into this, the past of the ancestors of the Aboriginal people of Australia, the more impressed I am, and the resilience and ability of people to adapt to these harsh environments and their technology and innovation. I think we've massively underestimated those, and I think we're starting to get a picture of this, the durability and fascinating time of human occupation in Sahul. It makes me proud to be Australian.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today, Dr. Brucker.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.